Hey everyone, and welcome to Mound Talk Podcast. This podcast is created by a college pitcher to interview professional pitchers, both current and former. In this podcast, we dive into their experience becoming a pro and their journey. Today we have on Detroit Tigers pitcher Andrew Moore. Andrew was drafted by the Seattle Mariners out of Oregon State in the second round of the 2015 draft. Spending time with Seattle from 2015 through 2018, he was traded to the Tampa Bay Rays in the 2018 season. In 2019, he spent time with the Rays, Giants, and back to Seattle. Andrew had signed with the Cincinnati Reds for the 2020 season before the shutdown, and just recently signed with the Detroit Tigers for the 2021 year. Andrew joins us for part one of a two-part series to talk about his experience playing at OSU, getting drafted by the Seattle Mariners, transitioning between levels of the minors, and switching from starter to reliever while in the majors. Let's go ahead and dive in. All right, so we're here joined with Andrew Moore, who just signed with Detroit Tigers. Congratulations on that. How was like the talks with the Tigers this little, you know, COVID offseason, I guess?
Kind of came out of nowhere, to be perfectly honest. We knew a couple teams were kind of gaining up interest, and then I actually got a text from Matt Boyd, my teammate at Oregon State, and said like, "Hey, just talk to the Tigers about you." And I was like, cool, like, okay. And then a couple hours later, my agent called and, said they'd requested medicals and were kind of moving along with the process. A few days later had the deal done. And then, like I was just telling you, got the deal agreed to. And then, my agent had texted me and said, you know, you're good to sign the contract. And then, 2 days ago, to fast forward to today, actually, he texted me again. He's like, "Hey, like you can sign a contract, like we said." And then I was like, "Hey, man, like I haven't got a contract. I can't sign anything." And he was like, "No, they emailed it to you. It might be in your spam folder." So ended up being my spam folder with all the junk emails. So had to sort through those to find it. But
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's a good feeling, though. It's exciting.
Imagine waiting like an extra week or two where the Tigers are like, "Okay, what's the problem? Like we agreed on this, and the dude's not signing." That's awesome, though. It's a little different than the last time you signed last year, where you had signed with the Reds and pretty much, I guess, just signed a contract, but not even, you know, technically been a Red, I guess you can say.
Yeah. Signed, I don't even know. It was probably in February or March. It was after spring training had started. Signed the contract when I was back in Oregon. And then they were like, "Sorry, we don't have like any spots for spring training, so we're gonna bring you in towards the end of spring training and then kind of get you rolling from there." So I was just working remotely with some of the coaches, and then they're like, "Sorry, man, like we're shutting it down. It'll be, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and then COVID will be gone, you know, we'll be back rolling." So it's kind of what I was preparing for. I was like, "All right, I'll be in Arizona, you know, end of February or March or so, and then we'll get going." And then, you know, one thing led to another, and never threw a pitch, never got to meet any of the coaches besides through Slack and Zoom, but the Reds are awesome. That's
crazy.
They're building some good stuff there. They're, obviously Bodie's instilling a good culture, but the coaches are bought in and they have some pretty good arms coming up. So that was a good year. Like you said, didn't throw a pitch for him, but really enjoyed my time with them. So,
so I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, I guess partly the Reds experience too, and Kyle Bodie, but to backtrack all the way to, I guess, like, you know, senior year, junior year of high school, when did your recruiting start?
Man, my recruiting started my first day, freshman year of high school. University of Oregon didn't have a baseball program, and they were just starting up that year. My very first day of baseball practice, I showed up and had a letter from University of Oregon. And I was like, "Dang, like, okay. Like, I don't know how they know who I am." I think I'd done like one clinic or one all-star weekend thing. So they probably, you know, was on the list of like hundreds of people that they sent one to.
And that was like, I guess like your eighth grade year that you went to something that they saw you at?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I couldn't tell you what it was, but so I guess technically it started there, but I didn't hear from Oregon State until I think maybe junior year of high school towards the end. And then honestly, from the first time I went on campus, I kind of knew that's where I was going to go. you know, I wasn't doing a bunch of clinics and camps or doing too much to market myself. So it was kind of between Oregon and Oregon State. But Oregon State just kind of blew me away from the coaches and getting to meet some of the players there on campus. I kind of knew that was the place to be. So I heard from them. Then a few months later, I was committed. So it was kind of an easy process, honestly.
Oh yeah. And I'm sure it helped being, you know, like you said, from Oregon. So it's, not like it's a far trek either, Oregon or Oregon State.
Yeah. Grew up a Ducks fan, but them not having a baseball program, Oregon State was everything baseball. So, I'd be a huge Duck fan, but I had like Oregon State stuff on my walls from when they won the national championships. And so it was definitely all baseball there.
That's awesome. So, I met you, right after you got drafted. So I knew like in college you had like, a great career, but I didn't notice until looking up for this podcast, like you had an amazing senior year of high school.
Yeah, that was fun. We had a pretty good team too. We had a good little group because we won state my sophomore year. And then
wow,
we thought we were going to do it again, junior or senior year. Like it was no doubt in our minds, but it just didn't really work out. But yeah, actually Ben Wetzler, who was, I think he was just a year or two older than me at Oregon State. I don't remember exactly, but he had set the Oregon record for, I think he was ERA or for some Oregon record. And I remember like reading it online and I was telling my buddy who was on the team at the same time in high school, like, I need to beat this record. Like I'm doing whatever it takes. So then like after every game, I'd be like looking at his ERA and calculating mine and trying to figure it out.
Dang.
And then, who knew that Ben would end up being one of my best friends and
that's awesome.
Oregon State and stay in touch quite a bit since then. But there's definitely a lot of studs I was trying to, catch records and keep up with.
So was, after your amazing senior year, and it seemed like just pretty much like an amazing, high school career too, was the draft, possible or was it just kind of like, I'm decided to go to Oregon State, doesn't matter?
I mean, it was possible. There was a few like local scouts from Eugene who I'd talked to a little bit. Not too many, but I was watching every single pick. I remember we had like a senior trip or something that day of the draft. And so we were on the trip and I was trying to like follow as much as could and like just like seeing all these names of guys I didn't know, but I never saw my name. So I was kind of bummed. But man, like I honestly couldn't imagine going from high school straight to pro ball. Like just those 3 years at Oregon State of, learning how to live on your own, how to, just be a, grown up in a certain sense and learning how to, formulate a schedule on your own and how to make food, how to lift weights, do all these things. Like skipping that step for me just didn't really make sense. So
yeah.
I guess pretty glad I didn't get my name called, because then that made me, work even harder at Oregon State to get that opportunity.
Definitely. And even besides just like, like you said, like listed the normal kind of college experience, of college athlete, even college students, like also your own experience as part of the Oregon State baseball team was quite like stand out from just a normal college baseball experience too. So that would have been real different.
Yeah. Just going into Oregon State, just the expectations you have right away. I mean, I think they had just come from, an LSU regional and went toe to toe with them, and they had, however many big leaguers on their team too. So, as a freshman, you're expected to be ready to go from day one. So, it causes you to grow up and figure it out pretty quick. And Coach Casey ran a pretty tight ship there. So, it was fun, man. It was a great experience. And, I wouldn't trade it for anything, honestly.
Do you remember, I didn't look, do you remember who the starters were your freshman year, like the staff?
Yeah, so Matt Boyd was Friday night. I threw most Saturdays. And then I think it was Ben Wetzler was most Sundays. And Boyd that year, obviously he's had a pretty good big league career now, but that year he was unbelievable. I think he was All-American. That was my best statistical year. And then, I mean, Wetzler had an unbelievable year too. And then 2 years later, he had like a 0 point something over 140 innings. Like,
yeah.
And then we had Jace Fryce, I think, coming back from Tommy John, another big leaguer lefty with just nasty stuff. And yeah, I mean, we had some pretty good rosters there at Oregon State, but yeah, that year was pretty special.
And you said that was your best year there, but I mean, when I looked at it, I didn't write them down, but it was like, you know, freshman year might've been your best, but it wasn't like the other years were any far off difference. But so I remember, I want to ask a little bit about this experience. So I was looking into Driveline, you know, years ago when I started learning about them, and it was talking about like, you know, Oregon State, like that experiment was pretty much what got Driveline and Kyle Bodie where he is now. And he was saying that he was talking to the coach there and he was like, hey, like, you know, like, I'll come in, I'll work with some of your pitchers, like give me like two or three of like your red shirts that aren't going to, you know, aren't going to do anything on the field. And he said he walked in and it was like, I can't remember the exact names, but I know you were there in that room.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm going to guess maybe Matt Boyd. And he was like, there's no way, like, you know, Driveline being like, you know, the stuff it's gone through, I guess, like the past, you know, 4 years to where it was like very controversial, but even before then where it was like, no one knows about it. Like he was like, there's no way I can take, you know, Friday, Saturday night starters like that are pitching right now and do this. Like, I'm not risking that. Tell me a little bit about like, you know, coming in, like, you know, when Driveline started coming into Oregon State.
Man, that was absolutely crazy. That was, so that happened my sophomore year. That was probably January, February of 2014. And like you said, we had just come off of, we went to the semifinals in Omaha. We had, you know, everyone back pretty much except for Boyd and a couple other guys. So it was, I think we were preseason number one or two or something. And then, yeah, we hear that this guy that, you know, you throw heavy, you know, rubber baseballs with is coming to talk to us. And then our pitching coach, Nate Yeske, who's an absolute stud. I mean, he's always looking for ways to improve, was like, all right. You know, he was there our Friday, Saturday, Sunday, our closer, our trainer, our strength coach, and someone else was there too, maybe our team doctor or something. Mm-hmm. And then Kyle rolled up and, man, I don't think I understood more than like five words. He was saying all these technical terms and we were just kind of sitting there like trying to pick up anything we could. But yeah, Kyle would come up at least once or twice a month, probably, would drive down to Corvallis from Seattle and, you know, give us, I remember that was the first time he gave me an overlay of like my fastball and my curveball.
Yeah.
And it just blew my mind. Like, I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then kind of just teaching us how they build their programs, you know, some of the movement patterns they're trying to train, that kind of stuff. And man, we saw results right away. I mean, relievers who would throw Friday and then, you know, their arms would be hanging Saturday and maybe could get in there Sunday. All of a sudden we're throwing Friday and felt even better Saturday. Some guys picked up, you know, 5 or 6 miles an hour on their fastball going from 87 to 92. You know, some guys just cleaning up their arm path, like across the board, I think everyone was seeing results. You know, I was seeing results from not necessarily top end velo, but I wouldn't, you know, dip down into the mid-80s later in my life, I'd be able to sustain, you know, velocity a little bit better through my start. So, man, that was fun. I mean, we had no idea what we were doing. We were, you know, doing reverse throws and hitting it off the ceiling. And Coach Jeske would show up to practice and be like, all right, I was talking to Kyle till 4 a.m. about, you know, this or that. They made it work, though, and it was pretty fun to be a part of.
That's awesome. So, I'm guessing before this, you hadn't really done much weighted ball type stuff because that wasn't really even big until Driveline. Were you nervous about starting it?
I think freshman year we'd had like, you know, bullpen before practice or whatever, you talk through, you know, whatever. I think we had talked about weighted balls before, but I think maybe I'd watched like a Trevor Bauer YouTube video where he had talked about it maybe at some point. But I mean, yeah, we had no idea, you know, the purpose of them. I didn't even know you threw, you know, balls lighter than 5 ounces. I thought weighted baseballs, it's going to be, you know, heavier. Mm-hmm. And then it's just trying to get your arm stronger. Like none of us had any idea. And yeah, we got some weird looks like going to, you know, Stanford or University of Washington. And, you know, we're throwing these colored baseballs behind our heads and sideways and all kinds of different ways. Like, it definitely turned some heads, but yeah, it was, I mean, we learned a ton. And like I said, we kind of were just learning on the fly as we went. So
that's awesome.
Pretty cool.
I love that you mentioned Bauer's old YouTube where he, like, you know, it almost looked like a dungeon where it was like dark in his room. I remember watching those and he was like talking about like his reverse slider and all this.
Yep.
So, you know, you have your amazing experience at Oregon State where I want to say, you know, just overall, like a 3-year span of a team, like that's probably as good as that team, like any team in college could get. When did the like draft talk start to pick up like heavily as in like, hey, like this is your next into the draft?
Man, I, again, with that too, like, it's just so hard because I, you know, up until my junior year, my velo picked up a little bit, but up to that point, I was a, you know, 5'11", 175-pound righty who's throwing, you know, 88 to 91 with, you know, below average off-speed stuff. Like, my best pitch was my changeup, has been my changeup since junior year and through pro ball, and I didn't even have that my first 2 years. It was pretty much fastball command and, you know, flipping in a curveball and a decent slider I could locate, but it was nothing too special. So yeah, it's not like scouts were, you know, banging on my door, you know, 24/7. The meetings definitely picked up after sophomore year when, you know, I had a decent year, had some ups and downs, and I was able to play on Team USA and threw pretty good for them. So I think that helped, but yeah, it definitely started to pick up once junior year started. And I had the change up and fastball velo going up a little bit. So I think that kind of, you know, got a little bit more interest going. But I mean, I didn't have an agent at that point. I had no idea what I was doing. I was taking all the calls myself and trying to navigate it, get advice from anyone I could. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, I had no idea where I was going to go.
Wow.
You know, where that was. 10th round, 15th round, 5th round, I had zero clue. Even up until draft night, like we had no idea. So it was
pretty crazy. So for going in the second round after having no idea is pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a few teams that said, you know, 3rd or 4th or 5th or whatever round. And we tried to get out of them to, you know, commit to a certain spot or whatever, but you know, teams have so many other guys on their radar and on their boards and everything. So
yeah.
Zero clue. And I honestly stopped watching for a while on day one.
Wow.
When I didn't think I was going to get picked. And then, yeah, luckily I stayed around the house and yeah, the Mariners called. So yeah, it was pretty funny, but yeah.
And so how was that experience getting drafted by, I mean, maybe not exactly hometown team, but, you know, still pretty close to, to home.
It was, oh man, that was pretty cool. It was like, I didn't think I was going day one, to be perfectly honest. So we had like a draft party set up for the next night. So it was only like
me,
my parents and like one family friend. And then like, I was about to leave the house and like take the dog on a walk or do something. And then my mom's phone rang cause she was acting as my agent. And then it was the Mariners and they were like, hey, would you take, you know, much money to pick? And then we were like, duh, like, of course, like, how could you even ask that? And then, yeah, getting to see Ken Griffey call my name was pretty cool too. I mean, that's one of the most iconic figures that's ever played the game, getting to say your name on national television. That was pretty cool. But yeah, just getting to think about like, okay, like, you know, my first, I'll be up in Everett. That's only a few hours away. I get to play Eugene in my hometown eventually. And yeah, just kind of having all those scenarios go through my head was pretty fun.
That's awesome. So was that, you know, were the Mariners one of your favorite teams growing up at least?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely Mariners and Giants. Okay. Was more of a Giants fan for sure.
That's what, yeah. That reminds me. I want to say I remember you being a Giants fan.
Yeah, huge Giants fan, but I mean, the Mariners were only 4 hours away, so we would go drive up to games at least once a year and go watch, you know, Felix throw or watch, you know, whoever else was coming into town. So, yeah, I love Safeco, and Seattle's, you know, one of the best cities I've ever been to. So, yeah, pretty special.
So just as a random question with your, you know, Giants fan and Driveline connection. Have you met Lincecum?
I did. I met him up at Driveline after 2017. Dan Straley and I drove up there for, I think, just like 2 or 3 days to do our assessment up there. And then when they had lab, so they had like the main area and the pro guys could go to another section. And so Dan and I headed over there, and I think it was Bauer, Lincecum, Tommy Malone. And then I want to say there was someone else too. Then like Caleb Cotham was hanging out there, who's now, you know, pitching coach and doing incredible stuff. Obviously Bodie was there, Matt Daniels, who's pretty high up with the Giants. So that was a pretty fun room to be, to be in. Yeah. There's a lot of studs in there. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
So your time with the Mariners, you know, once you get drafted through the minors, it went pretty quick. It seems like, you know, within one level a year, or even, I think there was 1 year that you went to. So just to kind of quickly go through, what kind of, like, I guess, not set you up for your success, but helped you, you know, new level, better level of hitters, all this, what helped you kind of like keep succeeding, you know, level to level?
Man, I think trying to keep things as simple as possible. you know, just knowing what makes me a good, successful pitcher. Like I said before, I'm not going to blow 97 by guys. I'm not going to have, you know, the huge swing and miss curveball that, you know, everyone's, you know, talking about. I need to be able to command my fastball. I need to be able to establish in. I need to be able to change speeds for strikes. I need to, you know, control the tempo in my favor. I need to hold runners. Like, this is what makes me a good pitcher and effective, and just never going outside of that. I would say just putting in the homework before the starts too. A couple of the pitching coaches that I had were huge on scattering reports and making us do them. So, you know, 2 days before my start, I'd be scouting every single one of their hitters and how I'm going to approach them. And then before every game, getting with the catcher and making sure we're both on the same page of, you know, this is this guy's weaknesses. Here's how we're going to get ahead. Here's how we'll put him away. These are runners. These are not runners. Was really making sure you guys are on the same page, so there's no guesswork at that point. It's, you have a plan before the guy even steps in the box, how you're going to, you know, set him up, and then how you're going to try to put him away. And that kind of, I don't know, gives you a little bit more confidence when you feel like you're already a step ahead because you have a plan before the at-bat's even begun. So I think the Mariners were really good in that sense, and just trying to get pitchers to learn how their stuff plays against the hitters in the box, as opposed to, you know, just spitting out, you know, just a general numbers or that. So they made it specific and challenged us to really kind of take control of that aspect of it. So, and that was something we did at Oregon State too. You know, Coach Jeske let me call, not call all my games, but call a decent amount of pitches. And, you know, we'd have conversations about, here's why we threw this, here's why we don't throw this, and just kind of basics of, you know, how to get through a lineup 2 or 3 times and all that fun stuff. So I would say, yeah, just learning what makes you a good pitcher, sticking to it, and trying to be the best possible version of you that you can.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I want to, you know, I want to dive deeper into this part, you know, the next episode we have where we talk a little more, instead of just kind of like your journey, more of like your like development, you know, all that stuff. But I want to say, I heard you, especially used to be really big on like keeping a journal and like, you know, this game, like, here's what I felt off with too. Is that something you still do?
Yeah, that was, in college, I did that quite a bit. And then did a decent amount through the minors. And then in talking to Jamie Moyer, he was big in journaling and kind of keeping some kind of running dialogue, I guess, after games. But yeah, honestly, that was huge for me, where, you know, if I had a good out, I would, you know, just jot down what I was feeling, what I was thinking, you know, nothing too crazy, but just some simple stuff. And then, you know, if I ran into a couple tough outings, or, you know, a certain pitch wasn't feeling good, I'd go back to a game where I knew it was feeling good. And I'd be like, okay, on this one, I was really trying to feel my chain off my ring finger and really get extra tension. Then, you know, trying to get back to that frame of mind, you know, kind of, I guess, give me a little boost in the right direction. But so yeah. Often you have a good game or you have a good stretch or whatever, and you're thinking all these things, and then you just kind of get used to it. And then a month later, you're like, dang, like, what was I thinking that was, or what was I feeling? Couldn't mm-hmm. remember that. Where, you know, if you just spend 5 minutes after a good bullpen or after a good game and write it down, or if you're struggling, you know, what you're struggling with, write it down and come up with a plan to make it better. But, you know, just process of writing it down or typing it out, and, you know, going from the brain down to the fingers, I know there's some kind of connection there. So
yeah.
Yeah, that was huge. I still do it. Yes. To answer your next question. I do it all a laptop now. I'm getting lazy, I guess, but, yeah, still keep a good, just kind of running dialogue of how everything's going.
'Cause that's something I picked up on that from Logan Gilbert when he was with Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And then I think I came across a video of like them talking to you about, you know, you did it at Oregon State. So I was wondering if you still did that. So in 2017, you're in Double A, Arkansas, and then get called up. What was it like? What was the conversation with like the manager of Arkansas to say like, hey, like you're in the majors now?
You mean from Tacoma?
Oh yeah, I called it from Tacoma. That's right, Tacoma. Yeah, that's what I meant.
So that was crazy. That was, it was actually our whole team. I want to say everyone except for like two or three people had gotten sick for some reason. Like there was some flu that was going around, and then I was honestly pretty sick. Like I was in the training room pretty much the whole game. Like all of us were seeing the doctor to try to get meds wow. and try to get, you know, something feeling better. And then I was supposed to pitch, I think the next day or 2 days later, going to, couldn't tell you. I think Reno maybe. And then Pat Listach called me in the office, and then I heard he was going to say like, oh, you know, here's your medication or here's this, or talk to me how I'm feeling. But he just comes in and he's like, hey man, like you're not going to go on this trip with us. And then I figured he meant like, 'cause I was sick and he, you know, they're wow. keeping guys behind. He was like, you're actually going to start, not expecting it. And then, man, just, I mean, I broke down and just kind of took it all in. But, yeah, that was pretty crazy. It was, yeah, definitely a special moment.
That's awesome. Who did you call first, your girlfriend or your parents?
Parents were the first call, and then probably my agent, and then Coach Yeski. I think they were in Omaha at that point, so I know he was one of the first calls, too. It was like 1 a.m. there, I think, but he was like doing wow. scouting reports, so he picked up and yeah, he was pretty pumped. But yeah, it was didn't even know who to call or what to do next.
That's awesome. So, you know, getting there, did you start your first like day there, or was it like the second day you were there?
Yeah, it was the second day. The first day, I don't think I was technically on the roster, but they let me go in the dugout. And then I just remember Seager pulled me aside. And he was like, hey man, like tonight, just like look up in the top row, like enjoy the lights, enjoy the sounds, like take it all in. He's like, you got to be on your A game tomorrow, like ready to go. So that was pretty good advice. Just kind of get used to the atmosphere. And it's a little bit different when you're in uniform in the dugout, as opposed to yeah. you know, in the stands and eating popcorn or whatever. So yeah, that first game was pretty cool. It was a good pitching matchup. I honestly don't remember who was going that night, but yeah, I think it might've been Verlander and Paxton, or Verlander and Felix oh, wow. or something maybe, but
yeah
it was pretty fun.
And that's awesome hearing that it was like Kyle Seager that pulled you over and was telling you, and not just like, I mean, you know, I can't think of who else was in the bullpen or, you know, a starter mm-hmm. that season, but like, it wasn't like, you know, some other starter that you've known, you know, through spring training or even like yeah. different steps of the minors, but like someone that's like, you know, mm-hmm. Seager had been there for years at that time. And he was like, hey, like take yeah. this in. That's awesome. So,
yeah.
You know, what was the transition, you know, maybe the, like the data they had, you know, cameras to see your stuff. What was the, you know, difference behind the scenes of like the majors and minors, at least with Seattle?
man, this the stuff, the data, the video, like you touched on, they have in the majors is beyond anything I could have thought. Where, you know, if there's any stat that could possibly be thought of or made up, they have it up there. But
that's crazy.
I mean, it's a lot to take in, and I think that was one of my problems, why I, you know, kind of got caught up a little bit. I, as much as before I talked about, I was so good at knowing who I was and how to be the best version of me I can. I think I started to kind of drift away from that, where, so much of the numbers that they have up there suggest, you know, to pitch these guys this way or use these as the out pitch. And I would be pitching more to that on the paper and the data rather than my strengths and how I like to pitch. And so I think I got away from that a little bit too much. And, then was just trying to be too perfect and kind of got caught up a little bit with doing too much with that. But James Paxton was honestly huge and, kind of taking me under his wing and helping me to formulate a plan on how I can prepare for my starts and, what video tools he uses and why and what data he likes to take in and keep it simple to make sure that he has all the necessary info he needs, but he's not necessarily, overthinking too much per se. So, it was definitely more of the video where you could pull up, whoever you wanted to see, Aaron Judge versus right-handed hitters in a 0-2 count versus sliders. And then in half a second, you'd have every single pitch that fit that. So then you could see if he chases or if he does this or that. So, there was a lot of times where I was just like, kind of get lost in looking at all these different videos and scenarios of guys. But yeah, it's pretty cool how much technology and info they have up there.
That's crazy. And you had, I want to say in 17, you had a few innings out of the bullpen too, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the transition like?
Yeah, I had, I don't know how many starts, but I had at least two or three out of the bullpen. It was tough because I had maybe thrown out of the bullpen two or three times in my life. Like high school, I started the whole time. Oregon State started every game, but probably two or three where I was, a scheduled come out of the bullpen in the minor leagues. I mean, in Everett, I would piggyback with Anthony Misevich, but I would know I was coming in the fourth inning for sure. So it wasn't like a true bullpen experience. So honestly, I kind of liked it. And I did a decent amount of it with Durham and the last couple of years. But just, you don't have time to like overthink or do anything. When they call your name, it's just, what do I have to do to get ready? So I'll pick up, the plyos, throw a few of them, get the body warm, then you're throwing, then all of a sudden you're in a game where it kind of gets you out of your routine and kind of challenges you in a different way. So I didn't know what to do. I was just trying to get as warm as I could in a few minutes to be ready to go once they did call my name. So, but I think that was good. Just trying to figure it out by myself. I think it was a good challenge for me.
Yeah. So I was about to say, that sounds like it was almost like a easy transition, not having to go, okay, like I have this hour long pre-start routine instead of like maybe 5 minutes. So it wasn't anything kind of like, stressful going from, okay, like not just starter to bullpen, in double A, but like in the majors, like the top, like you got to keep performing. It wasn't anything like stressful necessarily, or bad stressful at least.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't fully out of the, or in the bullpen sense, in the full sense of the word, because they would say, if the starter struggles, you'll be the first guy we go to. So if, whoever's starting the game starts getting a little bit of a, in a tough situation, I started moving around a little bit. So it wasn't like they were necessarily calling down and saying, you got the guy on deck.
Okay.
Just out of nowhere. But I mean, still, like you said, I'm a huge routine guy. I have, usually like an hour and a half, and every minute's pretty much mapped out of stuff I'm doing, where, you try to get everything in as much as you can, but you might only have 3 or 4 minutes. So it's just coming up with, what are the, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that I need to do to get my body and my arm ready to go before I get on the mound. And then, you know, when I get on the mound, I know I have to get my fastball going, and then one out pitch needs to for sure be dialed in the bullpen. And then, you know, you have eight more pitches on the game mound, so you know that you can throw your other ones out there, but making sure you have at least your fastball and something else going for you. That was kind of the approach I took, instead of trying to throw, you know, all four pitches to get warm, just dial in one for sure and then try to figure the other ones out. So I don't know if that was the smart way, but that was what made sense in my head. So I went with it.
So to save some, you know, I guess like content and all for, you know, part two, I guess we'll just go ahead and kind of wrap it up there. But I wanted to end off with like one question is, you know, in 2017 in the big leagues, when you're traveling, what was like something you made sure to do or something like you like to do like routine wise outside of like showing up to the facility or the stadium on the road? Like, was there like something you wanted to do every city or some kind of, you know, did you go to certain breakfast places, coffee shops, anything like that?
No, just trying to, honestly, I would just try to get out and enjoy the cities as much as I could. You know, it's easy to just sleep in and then get on the bus and go to the field and then sleep in, go on the bus, go to the field. And, man, it's just so much. It's so cool to be able to travel to all these different cities and, you know, stay in nice hotels and all that. So I really try to take it in. Me, Emilio Pagan, and Dan Altavilla would go out to breakfast or out to lunch and, you know, just try to see the sights and sounds as much as we could before heading to the field. But yeah, I didn't have anything else really too much. I would, you know, go on the team plane, put on my headphones, and usually fall asleep pretty quickly. yeah, it was pretty fun, but you know, I tried to keep it as businesslike and just get letting myself get as prepared and recovered as I could. But yeah, it was pretty special. And
what was your you know, what was the one city that you've been to in the majors so far that you just like, this wasn't like, you know, even before the stadium, you know, just like you said, like just going out to breakfast or lunch, what was one city that you're like, this is nice?
Man, Chicago was fun. That was really cool. That was, we went there right after the All-Star break too. So we got an extra off day there.
Okay. That was,
yeah. Super, I have some family out there. So, they got to go out to their restaurants and, yeah, just kind of walk around and enjoy the city. And it was perfect weather, I remember, while we were there. So yeah, Chicago is definitely the one that stands out to me.
That's awesome. So I'm looking forward to doing part two with you, but I wanted to wrap it up and say thank you for coming on for this episode.
Of course, man. This was fun. And yeah, part two coming anytime, anytime you need it, brother. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Mound Talk Podcast. To find more on Andrew Moore, you can find his Instagram at @AndrewMoore_23. And to find more Mound Talk Podcast, you can go to Instagram and search Mound Talk Podcast.